Hey, you're listening to Sloancast, your one-stop shop deep diver who discuss anything and everything about the greatest band of all time. Andrew Scott, Jay Ferguson, Chris Murphy, and Patrick Pentland, collectively known as Sloan. We are your fellow superfan hosts. I'm Rob. This is Ken. Ken, are you back in the New York groove or what, buddy?
I'm back on Eastern Standard Time. And what that means is that if it sounds like I sound different, it's because I don't have a sleeping child one room over that I have to be conscientious of. And so I'm able to exert my outdoor voice when it comes to podcasting. And I'm very excited to be here today to dig into a topic, into a format of podcast that I really love to dig into because I have a macabre sense of humor. Obviously, we love this band. It's the greatest band of all time. We're very democratic and diplomatic in terms of the way in which we talk about the different eras of the band's existence. However, I do think that there's something sort of very real and very personal about ranking the stuff that this band has put out. And I think I learn about my own tastes for the band's music every time I have to sit down and make a list of my favorites of anything that this band has put out. So today we're digging into the opening tracks of Sloan's 13 studio albums. Rob, was this a painstaking exercise for you?
We were talking about this before we started recording. Yeah, I hate doing this, to be honest with you. Like, I love this band so much. I don't want to have to choose certain songs over others. I just like the rankings of album covers and all that stuff. It's fun gaga, I guess, just to record and talk about, to have something to talk about regarding this band. But, you know, it's a fun exercise, I guess, in a way. But when I say fun, replace the word fun with painful. But yeah, I mean, you kind of have to set your own individual criteria, which I did, and I'm sure you did. And you showed me, we did a little poll via via Instagram, the social media, and we polled everybody's favorite first song from all the studio albums. And you sent me that list a little while ago, and I'm looking at it and I'm like, nah, that seems about right. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not shocked, you know? I guess having a closer relationship with some of the songs, I'll say firstly, my criteria was sort of songs that when it comes on, it kind of just gets my heart going. Like I just feel it, you know what I mean? And that could be because I'm rocking or because there's like an emotional reaction to the song, cause I have such a connection to it or I have a connection to that album. Double Cross is a good example, you know, Follow the Leader didn't do too bad in the listener ranking, but you know, I think people would generally put some of the more, you know, 90s classic songs above it or whatever. But for me, that album is so special and hearing that song, it's so unique, blah, blah, blah. But this was a real tough one for me. And I think by the time this episode comes out, my decisions might have changed a little bit. But, you know, I'll kind of stick with what I chose. But yeah, the criteria was sort of the ones that kind of hit me in the heart right away. And then secondly to that, if I had to make a decision, it would be what is the more undeniably classic song? You know, if I was really fighting on something, you know, and we'll get to this, but you know, a song that when you put it on, it's just like, oh, that's just, it's perfection in a different way than maybe the other song, you know, just like, there's just something about it that just slightly edges the other one out. But again, this is really tough and I'm sure most people will have a very different list. So keep your list at home and send it to us when you hear this episode. Let us know what your favorite first songs on all the episodes are. And I got to give a shout out to Sloan A to Z podcast over there. Baby Nene and Baby Nene's dad who are doing basically all of these sort of rankings on their show too, like ranking the favorite first song and all kinds of breakdowns of polls and stuff and different rankings. So shout out to those dudes who are doing an incredible job. But
absolutely. So let's dig into our rankings of opening tracks on the 13 Sloan records. To reiterate, we're only focusing on the studio LPs. I think anything else would sort of defeat the purpose. And Rob, do you want to start? Do you want to get us acquainted with your opening track preferences? Maybe you can run us through generally just what you were thinking about when you're choosing. You alluded to this earlier already, but what the criteria were that you used when you were composing your ranking?
Did you want me to go 10 to 1?
You can do, 12, 13 to 1.
Oh, what am I talking? 10. Yeah, 13 to 1. I'm thinking of like David Letterman top 10 or something. to go from like bottom of the list to top of the list. Sure. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. So yeah, again, this was me just sort of like, does the song kind of hit me in the feels? Just sort of like, if it's down between two songs, it's like, which one of these is just sort of the most classical, undeniable, you know, something you can put on and convert somebody with instantly kind of thing.
Right. Are there, before we dive in, I would be interested in this because I feel as though I have an opinion on this.
Yeah, shoot.
Are there objectively criteria that you can measure in some way or that you can sort of put your finger on that would be required to be a great opening track? Is it tempo? Is it dynamic? Is it lyrics? Like what makes a great opening track?
To me, it kind of depends on the listener. You know, I mean, right. I think for some people, a great opening track is something that kind of kicks things in, says everything about the album in the first 2 minutes or whatever, like right. Good in Everyone, for example. Like right. You hear that, it's undeniable. Like you know everything about this band in 30 seconds. The song's less than 2 minutes. It's a gut punch. It's got a fucking screaming solo. It's one of the catchiest things you've ever heard in your life. and it leads off that album perfectly. It's the perfect first song for that record. But then you look a couple records later, you know, the NS, it's not something that necessarily one might hear. Like if Between the Bridges is your first Sloan album, it might throw you off a little bit. You know what I mean? Because it's a song that's a little left of center. It's an Andrew song. You know, it's like he's not churning out, you know, the typical 3 minute pop single or whatever, the way maybe Murph does and Patrick does and Chris and Jay does to an extent throughout the years. But, you know, the NS is, and this kind of feeds into my ranking. It's unusual. It's very artistic. It's different and interesting sounding. And for that record, it really works as the first song, especially in the context of the records that came before it, you know, like it's just rocker, rocker, rocker. And then this sort of like the slapback drums, just everything about it, the keyboards and everything. So it's hard to sort of say that there's a general criteria. I think it would be kind of different for everybody. You could argue, you know, was the song like a big hit or is it just a, you know, is a song that is known to even casual fans? What do you think?
So for me, something that I was thinking about when composing my rankings, this will become evident, I think, when we do talk about the rankings, is it has to be a tempo setter for the album. So if it's an upbeat album, I think the opening track has to be at least as upbeat as the average tempo of that album. I think if you look at something like Never Hear the End of It, for example, and Flying High Again, Never Hear the End of It is not their most upbeat album. It's very atmospheric. And I think that, you know, Flying High Again kind of fits that bill. It's also not the most upbeat of their openers. It's quite rockin', you know, with an apostrophe at the end. However, it fits, it suits the coming, you know, the coming courses, as it were. So that's what I thought about first and foremost. However, there, you know, as you said, there are certain ones that hit you in the feels. And that being said, I would be very interested in what your thoughts are and what your rankings are. So,
13th on my list is Believe in Me. Great song. Love it in the context of Parallel Play. And again, like with the record cover rankings and all the rankings that we've done, it's not as though the song or whatever is bad. It's just in the context of the other songs. It's just like, how do you, something's got to be at the bottom, you know, like our buddy Greg Pollard, has his Maya Records ranked Instagram account. Same thing there. He's ranking Sloan and he's ranking Sonic Youth and REM and Fugazi. And he makes the play every time. Like, you know, something's got to be last, you know, these are all excellent, but something's got to be last anyway. So Believe in Me is that one. Just the other songs just edge it out, you know what I mean? In feeling and in every other way, not to say it's bad. I love that song. And great record, obviously. Yeah. So Believe in Me is 13. 12 for me is Pen Pals. Controversial here because it's such a classic. It's on Twice Removed, which is such a classic record for a lot of people. But in a way for me, I'm kind of somebody who's kind of more in love with the sort of post, you know, I want to say 2006, but really 2011, like Double Cross on that period of Sloan for me, you know, Double Cross, Commonwealth, 12, the
you
latest.
Like the more mature approach to songwriting.
Yeah. These are the ones that have, for me, been the ones I listen to more so like these days, like I'm really listening to everything post kind of 2010. And it's, I don't know if that's just a matter of the, of that I've just listened to all of the other albums so many times, because when I put them on, like I'll put on One Chord or Navy Blues or whatever, and it's still satisfying. But right. I don't know. I just find it, that's just where I'm at right now. That doesn't really, that's not really much of an indicator of anything, but Pen Pals is a classic. Again, it's edged out just because the other songs to me, in terms of the criteria, are just more suited. Great song to me too. It's amazing. But again, the criteria too, for me, some of the things that I really like are sort of left of center openers, right. You know, things that you wouldn't expect. And this is a straight ahead rocker, which, hey, for the time 94, like you need a straight ahead rocker at the beginning of TR. Great. Fantastic. Yes. Fucking track.
I'm going to insert here, by the way, because we were talking about this before recording. I'm currently wearing my Double Wonderful Sloan Twice Removed t-shirt that Gordon, yes, from Double Wonderful here in New York City designed, and it's fantastic. I get complimented on this often. And I will add that when I'm on the street, regardless of where I am, I was in Frankfurt, Germany, on a tourist boat on the River Main. And I was on the front end of the bow of the boat, and it's a big tourist, whatever, day cruise ship. And I hear this call from the distance, from way in the stern of the boat. Sloan! And I'm thinking to myself, like, did I just hear what I actually heard? And then I had made my way out towards the exit when leaving the boat. This was shortly before we docked. And then the dude who called that, you could see this like big shit-eating grin on the face of this, you know, sort of older, 60-ish man. And then he's like, hey, do you like Sloan too? Yeah, I'm from Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia, and I saw your t-shirt and I thought that maybe you'd be from Canada. And like, yeah, well, I kind of like, you know, Sloan's all right. But anyways, I thought it was funny because this band, for whatever reason, I have people of all ages and stages in their lives approaching me when I wear Sloan merch, regardless of where I am. I was on a Zoom call with my colleagues in New York, and somebody from New York was like, are you wearing a Sloan shirt? I love Sloan. So anyways, I thought that was great. Kudos to Gordon, who's been doing excellent stuff with his double wonderful profile. I think it's great that, you know, there are people across the world who share this love, however strong that love might be, whether it's a obsessive, over-the-top, super fan type
hello
love, right? Or whether, you know, it's a more modest admiration of the greatest band of all time. You know, I think it's just great that has become embedded in what we as Canadians feel is our calling card when we're out and about in the streets of the world. So that was a long tangent. We can return to our regularly scheduled opening song ranking programming.
I love it, dude. I love it. Yeah, I mean, when I was living in downtown Toronto, I was walking around more.
Right.
And where I'm now kind of in small town, rural, west of Toronto. And but when I was around, I have my vest that has Sloan, the original logo spray painted on the back.
Right.
And I would get people, like, I remember walking home one time from Tim Hortons or something, and some lady was like, is that Sloan, like the band? I was like, yeah. She's like, oh my God, I love them. You know? So that,
hate to break it to you, is the toilet company.
Exactly. Yeah. Womp womp. But yeah, I would get that regularly, like once a week, somebody would be like, hey, Sloan. All right. You know?
Yeah.
But very cool. So getting back to my list again, saying these song titles and ranking them is heartbreaking.
Yeah, Pen Pals at 12. I'm interested in the rest of this.
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough. Again, like, okay, so 11, Spin Our Wheels. I love 12. I fucking love this song. This might even be my favorite song on 12, which says something here. Like, these other songs are just so fucking great. Like, fuck. Anyway, for me, the reason I guess I put it at 12 is that it's maybe more just in this kind of even goes against my arguments for songs later in a way. I guess I'm just eating myself here, but you know, it's more of a just sort of traditional straight ahead rocker. And yeah, it's pop perfection. Don't get me wrong. Like, you know, name your top 10 fucking favorite Beatles or Stone songs. Like, good luck. Sure. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to want to shoot yourself. But yeah, I had to put Spin Our Wheels here only because of the other songs. Number 10, Gimme That. sort of the same thing, you know, like a fantastic opener. It's so wordy and catchy and fucking fantastic. But in the company of the other songs, I kind of had to put it here. I love Action Packed so much, as you've heard over these past few episodes, where we were talking about Action Packed, and I'm basically just talking myself out of putting it so low now, but this is just, if you can't tell, listener, this is just very painful for me. But well, anyway,
also, I mean, as you start to list off these songs, I'm thinking to myself again as well about the correlation with the album as a whole. And it's like, you know, where's Action Packed at in your album ranking? So if the opener for Action Packed, you know, if Action Packed is sort of in the middle, let's say it's at, you know, whatever, 8 or 10 or 7 or wherever it might be, if the opener serves as the album and the opener is as good as the album, then I'm not sure that there's going to be a whole lot of variation there. You know, and also I think by that point, this is just speculation, by that point in their career, I think that Sloan very well knew what a utilitarian opener would be for an album like Action Packed, and it wouldn't have to be The Good in Everyone, you know, which was very off the cuff and very kind of outside of the mold for every song on One Chord to Another is really a masterpiece and a masterpiece in isolation. Whereas Gimme That is in line, I think, with the rest of the album, right? So that's, you know, certainly when you're starting to say, you know, how can I rank this above this, maybe I'm, you know, speculating as to the subliminal reasons as to why you did that.
It's interesting you say that. I mean, for me, like when we talked to Murph about Action Pack specifically, he was saying, he kind of said with Gimme That, you know, he was trying to write that sort of super catchy anthemic opener. Like, I think he maybe even wrote it with that in mind. Like, this is the first song. And in that respect, I would say that he nailed it, you know. Yeah. I don't know that these first songs necessarily correlate to how I would rank the various albums.
Right.
Especially later on in my list.
Okay.
I'm primarily just basing this off of the first song.
Okay. Well, I would be interested now that you've teased that. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I really fought with this, and I'll admit I did this list a couple of times.
Right.
I did the list with sort of my first instinct, and then I kind of really thought about it and went through the songs I was kind of surprised.
There's one or two that you haven't mentioned yet that I'm actually pretty interested in when they're going to pop up.
Yeah, this next one is probably one of them. You know, for Commonwealth, you know, if you're talking about I think the ranking we're describing here is like the CD version or the digital version.
Yes.
Because when Commonwealth came out, I mean, even the guy said the argument could be made that either one of the sides could be the first side and you could listen to it in whatever order you want to.
Yes.
In which case, we've come this far from Jay, Carried Away from Chris, 13 from Patrick, or 48 Portraits from Andrew could essentially be the first song.
An opener, yeah. Mm.
Right. So if it were the other songs, maybe it would be a different story. I put We've Come This Far here basically because, like the NS, if you're thinking about the record in the order it is digitally or on a CD, it's the opener to Jay's section. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it might not necessarily be the opener to a fully compilation style Sloan record, but to open his side, like he really, you can tell that he sort of bookended his side, his five songs, like the opener, the closer, they were very, you know, a sort of short little bumpy opener, followed by some, you know, more upbeat classic J-pop. that's what I'm calling it. I'm stealing that term from Japanese pop music, but anyway, it's now Jay's thing, but anyway, so, you know, I put it here to be a little controversial and be a little different because when I think about that song, I really do love it a lot. And I love this record a lot and I love his side specifically a lot. And for me, because it has that sort of left of center vibe, it's not the traditional opener. And because the quality of the song, I put it here at 9. But these bottom five, I mean, are really interchangeable for me. Like they could have kind of gone in any order.
Right.
From here, I got to show some love for Steady, Magical Thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a list variant where this was a little higher in the ranking just because I'm so into Steady. Like it's just such a fucking perfect record. And to occur so many years into their career, as we've talked about endlessly on this show, is just insane.
Yeah.
But I have it here at number 8. And and the reason for that is just that it's such so quality. I'm kind of just repeating myself here, but
could there have been another opener on SETI, or is that the only potential opener for this album?
That's a good question for all of these. You know, could there have been another opener? And then some of these records, some of these songs, I could argue a different song. I'll be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And when we get there, I mean, like a song, an album like Between the Bridges, like knowing that there was an original alternate order and that the NS was actually musically in a different place.
Yes.
But thematically became first.
What was the original opener for BTB?
I want to say it was Edge of the Scene. I think I might have to confirm that, something like Edge of the Scene or something else. Mm-hmm. But I know, cause what's the song when they do it live, something goes into yet another thing. What's the song? I think it's Edge of the Scene, right? Where they would play that live and then it rings out yet another thing that I didn't know. So I think musically that's the answer. Mm-hmm. I'd have to confirm, and Chris might be just wringing his hands right now in anger, but, so Magical Thinking at 8, there isn't another song on that record that could go first. And not that there aren't other songs that are of the ilk or the quality that that song has, you know, Keep Your Name Alive as it would be an excellent opener, for example. Mm-hmm. Either any of the Patrick songs. I know that it was argued at some point, Simply Leaving was originally kind of in the talks to potentially be the opener, something like Between the Bridges, where you kind of open a record with something a little more somber, down-tempo. I'm glad they went with Magical Thinking. I think it's sort of the only answer. They've talked about, 30 years after Underwhelmed, it's Patrick and Chris singing, it's wordy, it's upbeat. It's almost like Underwhelmed Part 2 in kind of a sideways way. Although they're not musically necessarily the same or whatever, but I love Magical Thinking so much, and I don't think another song on the record beats it for a first song, like not even close. Again, this is another one. This next one I'm about to say could be number one, and I have it at number 7. Flying High Again.
Okay.
Like all four guys in the band take a verse, or a half verse rather.
Yeah.
The song's like a minute long.
Yeah.
It's fucking perfect. Why is it at number 7? I'll tell you in a second. But, I love it for all the reasons everybody loves it. It's just like the harmonies, that stack of harmonies in each chorus, the way that they change who's singing the lead each chorus. It's not the same stack of vocals. It changes each time. It's fucking insane.
Yeah.
And it's sort of their calling card first song, especially of the past 20 years, like when you think about, or maybe not 20 because it hasn't been 20 since the record, but the past decade plus, like unless they're playing a festival, and I've even seen them play sort of bigger like street shows and stuff where they open with it. It's sort of like the opener, make sure everybody's mic is working. It's almost like a nice sound test, if you will.
It's sort of self-referential, at least in its construction, because it's like we're back, this is after 3 years of waiting. And of course we've talked about this as well in the past, and I think Murph even referenced it, when they released Action Packed in 03, that he was kind of angry that they couldn't get an album out quicker after that, because they had a pretty clear intention with Action Packed of this being a very specific genre of album. But then people would think for the 3 years following, like, this is all you can do. This is your latest. And then I recall as a fan, just it felt like forever. And so when they came back with Never Hear the End of It and Flying High Again, and the symbology around like, yo, we're back and we're flying high again, and it's all four of them and they're all committed, and hearing Andrew's voice on a song again, like that really hit different for me. It certainly emotionally and whatever, as an invested Sloan fan in 2006, was a powerful, powerful opener.
Absolutely. So now that we're talking about Never Hear the End of It Again, it's taken me a while to find this file, and it was given to me by a certain CMM some time ago. Interesting to note that we've mentioned this before, but that each verse for Flying High Again was actually a full verse for each guy. And I don't know where the verses for Chris, Jay, and Patrick are. I'm sure that's a special edition, something or other in the future. But I do have the Andrew full verse, and we'll listen to it now.
I saw a shuttle taking off again with the brand new CPU inside it. It went okay so far, so good, I guess. At least until all the people get out of it.
Flying high again. Oh my God, so good. Anyway, so I this is a great time to just mention that I would love to hear the full verses. Like, I mean, I don't know if they were performed with musical accompaniment and then edited. Right. I have to assume so.
Sure.
Because they would have been singing to something, like maybe just to a bed, like a demo bed or something. But super interesting. Anyway, Flying High Again. It hurts my heart to put it at number 7 here, but that's feel like I organized 6 through 1 for very specific reasons, and you'll hear those now.
Let me put it this way, and this is an important parameter for how we're ranking these songs. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that Flying High Again, if you're ranking all of the 240-odd studio tracks that Sloan have recorded over the course of their career, Flying High Again will probably be, relative to its position in the opener's list, higher. I'm assuming that it's higher than halfway. Like
it might be top 3, you know? Sure. Like, or if I were to just say, like, boil down Sloan into one song, it's a great example, you know, not necessarily as something that would instantly make somebody a believer, which I think it is that too. I mean, I think there are probably songs more appropriate for that argument, but if I'm just talking about top songs of all time, it's for sure top 3, top 5, for sure. In this context, the other songs is just like, fuck, if you're just talking about the first song and all of the criteria that we've mentioned, this is why it's there. Number 6 for me, Underwhelmed, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's a little higher on the list for a couple of reasons. One of them being, it's like, you know, when we talk about Underwhelmed, it's their first statement, it's their big statement. It's the song that probably got them the most notoriety. It is the song that got them the most notoriety early on. It's like saying your favorite Nirvana song is Smells Like Teen Spirit, or, you know, fill in the blank. You know, your favorite Beatles song is, you know, whatever, Ticket to Ride or something. I have no idea what I'm talking about. You know, my favorite Eagles song is fucking Hotel California or whatever. Piggies. But it's so high here because they did something, and we've talked about this previously, that other people didn't do. And I think what made them so unique at the time is it's a super catchy as fuck song, and it's musically interesting and it's great, but it's so wordy and so weird too. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's catchy, but they're not just singing about, you know, like, oh, I love you, you love me, isn't our hair shiny and clean or whatever. The lyrics are fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And deep and fucking interesting. And
it's also, as soon as you imagine you're in 1992 and this is the first thing you ever hear of this band, that's pretty unique. Like, that's not whoever else, Soup or like, what? No, maybe not Soup, but like, who are the bands coming from the Maritimes at that point in time? It wasn't,
Great Big Sea. I don't know.
Great Big, yeah, sure. You know, it just doesn't sound like anything that you've heard on college radio.
Dude, you know, we talked about this before. These guys blasted so far past their peers.
Sure.
Like, it's not even close. Hmm. They rocketed past everybody. Hmm. And so for me, Underwhelmed is here, not only because, and like you were just talking a second ago about people hearing it at the time. You know, if you're a younger kid, early teenage person, you're hearing it and loving it because it's so catchy, kind of irrespective of the lyrics. If you're somebody high school, maybe early college age, who's more keyed into the lyrics, you're loving it for the previous example and also the fact that it's witty and smart.
Sure. You know?
And that could go for people who are adults. Like, you watch those 20-year anniversary compilation videos on YouTube of Sloan interviewing all of their sort of peers and luminaries, whether it be the Kids in the Hall or the Degrassi people or you name it, bands who would eventually become something like Broken Social Scene, Death From Above, The Deers, you name it. They all really loved, they all kind of keyed in on this song and this experience.
Yes.
And so it's universal in that way, but to me, it's got the heart of just it's like the most perfect pop song with the heart of a total weirdo, you know. And so for that reason, if it wasn't that way, if it was maybe more stripped down and more simple, maybe a little more straight to the point, I would have kind of put it down a little bit more. But I got to give it up for Underwhelmed because it just smashes you over the head. It's so perfect. Anyway, so number 5 again, another one. I don't know where I put it here because it's no question it's a great song. I'm talking about the NS from Between the Bridges, number 5. In the context, like I said earlier, of the previous records, you know, just the previous album before that, you heard She Says She Means, previous to that, Good and Everyone, Pen Pals, Underwhelmed. it's a sort of, I remember hearing it. I think it was like a we've talked about this before as well. I keep saying that on the show, but I heard a little online preview, whether it was Amazon.com or some sort of online preview of the tracks. Could have even been Elaine's site or Sloan Hut with a Squirrel Owl.
Right. Yeah.
I heard, as soon as I heard it come on, and that's, you hear those slapback drums with that keyboard. You could probably tell me what kind of keys he's playing. Was it the Rhodes?
It's a Rhodes, yeah. He's playing the Rhodes.
The Rhodes mixed with the slapback drums, mixed with Andrew's solo vocal, just echoed out, reverb or whatever they're doing. That is a vibe. And it might be a vibe more than any other track on any other album. Like, it's just such a unique place.
Well, and we've also spoken about, and this might have been in episode one or two of Sloancast, the continuity in that album, and it's really an album that flows fantastically. And I thought, you know, even that there might be a story behind it, it might be a concept thing, but you fade into an Andrew track to begin the album. You hear the Rhodes. Yeah. It's a musical, you know, this instrumental opening, and the album ends with an Andrew track that has an instrumental ending and fades out. And so there's this wonderful continuity in between the bridges, which I don't think was entirely intentional, but just by luck of the draw, and by, you know, certainly also the savviness when in the room, when people brought their material to the studio and like, oh yeah, this is going to be a great opener. The end, that's it. Right. And it's the only Andrew track that's ever opened an album.
I'm going to suggest that it was intentional, by the way, putting it first and bookending it with Delivering Maybes. I definitely think that was intentional. And it's why I think they pushed it to the first track. One of the reasons, probably. Right. Just because musically it's so left of center compared to the rest of the records. It's such a killer song.
Well, I mean, if you say as well that, you know, Edge of the Scene was in the running for being the opener, and then they intentionally kind of switched it around, then there must have been some sort of design.
And it's hard to, I mean, it's really hard to decipher why, you know, Chris has even talked about, why did I leave Summer's My Season off between the bridges?
Yeah.
And he's welcome to have that internal struggle, I guess. You know, I'm happy with Between the Bridges the way it is. To me, he has a different, and the band members have a different perspective than we do. Yeah. We know it as the record that it is and love it the way it is.
Yeah.
For the NS and stuff, I mean, yeah, just a complete out of left field selection for the first song. I think they were also, I want to maybe guess, at a place of somewhat comfort. You know, it wasn't like they were laissez-faire putting out good, you know, The Good in Everyone and Between One Chord to Another, thinking, well, that's our final statement. Let's all, you know, ride off into the sunset and do other projects. Mm. Suddenly that's a huge hit. You know, the next record, it's like, okay, well, let's intentionally really blow this shit up, Navy Blues.
Yeah.
Navy Blues and One Chord both do great. They're riding a crest of extreme success again. And then with Between the Bridges, they're like, okay, you know what? Let's see how far we can stretch these people. You know, this first song isn't necessarily going to be for the masses. This one's for us.
Right.
And we're going to make you listen, and we're going to force you to focus and not just give you what you want and what you expect. And I respect that. I think that's really cool. But anyway, so as I said, NS at number five, I'm talking so much here. I apologize. Number four, this could be interchangeable from number four to one here could all flip around at any time.
Yeah.
Number four, Follow the Leader. I mentioned earlier that I have a kinship to Double Cross. It's a special one for me. Not only do I just love that album, it's so great.
Yeah.
It has such a great, unique sound to it. Everybody's songs are fantastic. I love that tour. I was on that tour a little bit, to be honest. But it's just such a classic record, and I think a real turning point in their career the past 10 plus years. Showed that they were, and not that anybody thought they were going anywhere, but I mean, like, it's just, you know, for a band 20 years in kicking ass like that, and now, you know, a band 30 plus years in with steady, just, you know, these guys are insane. So Follow the Leader is there. It's at one point super catchy. It grabs you right away as soon as you hear it. But musically, very intense. You know what I mean? Like, we've talked in the past.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you watch Murph try to sing that song and play the bass at the same time. It's intense, you know, and it goes in every which direction, you know, like the little breakdown right at the beginning. There's some crazy Andrew drumming going on there. Like, people got to take notes of that. Holy shit. He's going crazy the whole time. Some classic Andrew fills in that song. And then the outro, it hits that outro. It comes a completely different song. Don't let them get away. You know, just like that insane outro. Like, who is producing music of this quality?
Yeah.
At all, let alone decades into a career.
Yeah.
Just it's insane. And again, these top three are only top three because they charge me up. They hit my heart directly. Follow the Leader included in that list, I should say. Number three, Good in Everyone. Mm-hmm. Could be number one. I put it at number three just because the top two for me are just more sort of like maybe connected to my heart, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
Good in Everyone, where do you even start with this one? Perfect pop. It's less than 2 minutes long. It gets the story told. And you could argue it's a perfect first song because it has the intro. Like, would you welcome to the stage? You know?
Right.
And I have an argument for one better than that. But anyway, it pains me to put Good in Everyone third. Oh, my God. Patrick just delivering with like the song of a lifetime.
Yeah.
The song of a career. Some people, you know, have a whole millions of people have a musical career and never reach a high point like this. You know, some people never write a song of this quality. And the thing is that it's so simple. I mean, I guess simple for the layman like myself. You know, it seems simple, but or maybe it is a little simple. But I mean, like, it's just brilliant the way you can take something that sounds sort of simple and basic. Like, it's just a couple of chords.
Yeah.
He's not going crazy around the fretboard or whatever. His solo is just a screaming kind of one note that's kind of held, you know.
It was such a tempo setter, and it's so unique. And it's I think what this, you know, I'll have time to riff on mine.
Sure.
But speaking of riffs, the opening kind of punkier intro and outro to this song makes it super special and unique, and it grabs right onto you, right?
Yes. Oh, totally.
That you can't do that like halfway through the side A.
You're totally right. And in hearing the radio edit versions of the song where it just goes, it's still great, but there is something about the sort of like ebb and flow of hearing that intro first and then cutting into it.
Yeah.
Just like I was saying with the Follow the Leader, that outro works because of what came before it. And there are other songs like that too, like Chris songs, especially where he kind of takes a detour and the song becomes a different song out of nowhere, you know? Number two, If It Feels Good, Do It. Mm-hmm. This one is here because, and maybe excluding the first song, hearing this as a first song, hearing it as a closer, whenever I watch this music video, I fucking jump around the room. Like, you can't.
It's interesting that you say that, though. This is one of the songs that I think could work as a closer too. And it has closed off, you know, numerous concerts before that I've seen, at least, you know, the main set list. It might have also been the last encore that they played in, you know, the mid-2000s or something, but it's certainly something that, like, it's something to close down. Like, you'd be if you were Keith Moon, you'd be putting your sticks through the toms at the end of it. It feels good, right?
It makes sense as a closer because it has that outro, you know what I mean? Like, it has like and Murph's doing a scissor kick and Andrew's doing crazy fills and Jay's got his guitar up in the air and Patrick's got his guitar up in the air. He's doing his windmilling his arms. Like, it works. It's a musical moment. It's not just a musical song that you hear. It's like it's something that you're experiencing, like a physical thing.
Yeah.
And it obviously works as an intro because it's the first song of this record. And this song's dedicated to you. And, you know, like, there are those elements that again, I can't really place Feels Good anywhere else on Pretty Together, to be honest with you. I would say it does work kind of anywhere in the set and has worked as a closer, opener over the years, you know.
Does it work? Do you put this in like on song 10 on the set, like with that? Or is it basically it works either super early on the set or super late on the set or as an encore?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, with the past decade, they've been opening for themselves and they played two sets. So, I mean, as a set one closer, sure. You know,
but middle
of set one or middle of set two, I don't think I've ever seen that. They could do it. And this is the crazy thing about Sloan, man. It's like so many amazing songs. You could fucking do that. You could, if you were them, put Feels Good in the middle of a set somewhere and nobody would bat an eye because they've still got, you know, like 25, 30 other fucking incredible songs that could close or open a set.
Yeah.
Like, it's unbelievable. So that's where Feels Good is for me. Number one. It should be obvious to you if you're kind of keeping score here, but She Says What She Means.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, hearing Navy Blues for the first time, the cough, it's got like a funny, it has a weird thing at the beginning, the cough.
Right.
That fucking riff, okay?
Yeah.
it's something that you can play for anybody.
Yeah.
It makes them a believer. Yeah. It's catchy as shit. And it's also weird. Like I was saying, yeah, with Underwhelmed. Yeah. I don't need to tell you, but I mean, like that climbing riff, which I think is an Andrew and Chris thing.
Yes.
I don't know if they're lifting that from somewhere or inspired by something specific. I, at that point and since, have never heard anything like it. Okay. Like, I don't know what that's coming from, you know, like it's a straight beat, but it's just like an off kilter riff that's so catchy and so cool.
Yeah.
And Chris is singing his ass off the whole time.
Yeah.
It's so catchy. The chorus is incredible. And then it blows up in the outro. Maybe I don't stay in touch much. Like it just goes off and it, you know, and it's got one of the Chris Murphy sort of rolling back and forth outros,
yes,
you know, tearing and turning and tearing and, you know, like, on Between the Bridges.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just whenever you want me, whenever you need me, whenever you need me, whenever you want me. Yeah. There's nothing, everything is perfect about the song. And again, I put it first here for a couple of reasons. Like I said, it's weird, but it works as an opening song live on the record, whatever.
Yeah.
And for me, it hits me in the heart, you know, like as soon as I hear that, like that slide down. Yeah. Oh my God. It's like somebody shoots me with adrenaline, you know, it just goes right into my heart. And like, it's what I assume taking drugs is like.
You got a power, pop EpiPen is what you got.
Exactly. It's like Requiem for a Dream in music or something. But anyway, that's my list. Thank you for indulging. That has been an hour or whatever the fuck.
That's fine. I mean, really, I won't spend as much time on mine because you resonated on a lot of what I wanted to say, which is great. I would say there's some really interesting dissimilarities in our lists.
Sure.
And there's some really interesting similarities. And I think that a lot of the reasoning that we're using is very similar. I will add that, you know, my criteria for choosing the opener or ranking the openers was, on the one hand, how well does that work as something that sets the tone for an album? On the other hand, you know, do I like the song? Like, what's my personal preference? And then I think as well, just sort of, could I imagine this anywhere else within the album or not? Or is it only really something that could work as an opener? So I think that there are some that really fit the bill really well on that one. And there's other tracks where you could feel as though, okay, we could have shifted this around a little bit. There might be other tracks on the album that might have even suited the number one position better or equally as good. So for number 13, I've also, for number 13, I've got We've Come This Far. This is, and it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, that the discs on Commonwealth, the four sides, aren't necessarily meant to be played in a particular order. However, I think for most people experiencing this album, this would have been the first song that they heard. And certainly when I heard this song for the first time, I was like, okay, interesting, like a low to mid tempo kind of, you know, it's a J song. It's the only J opener out there. And, it is, I think for me, one that I had to take a while to warm up to. I also didn't see the band live on this tour. I have since seen at least live videos of this being played live. I don't think I've ever seen it played live. So for me, this is the number 13. That doesn't necessarily mean that I do not like the song, as you said. However, if I think about it, it starts to get real now because now we're getting into the up-tempo stuff. If I go to 12, I have the same number 12 as you do. It's Spin Our Wheels. Although no, your Spin Our Wheels for you is at 11. For me, it's 12. And for the same reasons as you said, I think Spin Our Wheels for me is interesting because it feels like it's a bit of a safe bet for an opener track on this album. Thinking about how Steady opens, Magical Thinking is a little bit off kilter. It's a little bit different from what they've chosen as an opener before. Spin Our Wheels feels like it's a very safe bet for an opener. And I think that there's potentially one or two other tracks on that album that could have served in that position equally well. If I think about something like, for example, what if we did 44 Teenagers as maybe, I don't know, like 12 for me is something where, everything is kind of stylistically quite all over the place.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's nobody holding a gun to Sloan's head in 2018 saying, you know, this is the sequencing you need to use. So it's spinner wheels is for me number 12.
I'll say with 12 too, you could argue that it's the one that's the furthest away from the brief, if you will, where everybody's kind of doing their own thing.
That's
and then they just sort of sequence it, you know?
Sure.
Which in the context of Sloan works, like it's fine. Yeah. You can do that with them because they're Sloan.
Yeah.
But you know, we have examples of other records where everybody kind of got the brief, you know,
yeah,
and it's a little more perhaps cohesive sounding.
Yes. Yeah. I agree. For number 11, I have Believe in Me. That was your number 13. Yep. For the same reasons as you. I do think, though, that this is one track that, you know, it maybe is one of two or three tracks on that album that could have served as the opener. It's certainly, you know, one of the songs that's, when you listen to it, intentionally aiming for radio single play.
Sure.
Number 11, I have Magical Thinking. Sorry, this is number 10 now for me. Number 10, I have Magical Thinking. I was struggling with this one because I do think it's a fantastic opener. I think it's something that really sets the tone for Steady. I love the syncopated beat. I love the fact that it's up-tempo and almost like a dance type, like dance rock song.
Yeah.
And I think that we're now getting into the territory, as you mentioned, where really any of the next three or four could have been interchangeable. I have in 9, Gimme That. That was hard for me. I have to admit, it was hard for me to see Gimme That this low down the list because I have a very particular mood when I'm, you know, if I want to be in a particular mood, I put on Action Packed on my headphones and I walk to where I want to go, and I'm walking 30% faster than I normally would because I'm listening to Action Packed.
Yeah.
And all that begins with Gimme That. When I put on my headphones and I'm listening to Gimme That, it puts me in a mood. And that's, I think, a quality of a really good opening track, and something that, you know, helps you get, I mean, it's really an aid to get you into the entire album. Right. If you have a great album with a shitty opening track, odds are you're probably not going to listen to that album as much as an equally good album with a decent opening track. At least, you know, from my experience. I'm not going to name names, but there's a couple out there. I have, what am I at now? I'm at number 8.
I want to say quickly too about Gimme That. You know, if you've ever seen the show Freaks and Geeks, where the one character's in this basement with his drum kit and he's cranking Rush, and he's just fucking playing along, that's me, you know, with my drums in the basement listening to Action Pack.
Like,
that was the record that I played along to so much. Oh my God. So I hear you. And it's my driving music. Put it in the car, crank that shit.
Yeah. And speaking of Rush, I mean, there's bands out there that, of course, there are more, you know, prog rock bands, of course, that do these giant prelude type opening tracks where, frankly, if I'm in a hurry or if I'm just listening leisurely to an album, it's kind of heavy, you know, heavy fare to have to dig through that. You know, I love The Who, but I think about Tommy, which is a great album. And then I have to listen to The Overture and it's... It's like it's a preview of every, as an overture is, but of like all of the songs on the album, just like skip. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, Gimme That is kind of the opposite of that. It's pretty much the entire Action Packed album in one song.
It totally is.
You know, which is fantastic. I've got, this is the big discrepancy actually, I think, between our lists. I've got If It Feels Good, Do It as number 8. I think, in part because I feel as though the previous, you know, the next 7 are a lot stronger. In part because I think that the effect of the song is not immediate enough. There's a long intro. There's the whole build up. There's the kind of the effects loop going on in the background where it's, you know, you can hear that they've kind of done some digital editing around that, which was very, you know, of the time. It's a great opener. It works way better live than it does on the album. I think it's a song that you have to see, and you have to see what the band is doing, especially in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, when they included it in the set list more often and frankly also put a little bit more oomph into it because it was then the statement track on that set list, or, you know, towards the closing of that set list especially. So I've got Feels Good at, what am I at now, number 8?
I gotta say though, you mentioned seeing them. I agree that it is a song you should see live, but that fucking video, especially the band performance version that doesn't have anybody in it.
I agree.
When I picture Sloan playing in my head, I kind of picture them then in a way, like Jay jumping in the air, you know, looking like he's in the fucking Cars or something. Chris with the, you know, with the jacket, and Patrick making the face, like, ooh, and that super close up of Andrew where he's just fucking nailing the fills. Like, oh my God.
I think that era of Sloan live performance is sort of the one that's etched in my mind the most acutely. Certainly, you know, Chris doing the high kicks, the Windmill Jay stuff.
It's
Andrew heads down, you know, salt and pepper hair.
It's the era that has sort of been the blueprint for everything they've been since, you know, like the past 20 years. Yeah,
I agree. And so, yeah, visual. But it, for me, if it feels good, do it is... It's a work unto itself. It's, you know, it's something that shows up, and it could be that, like we said, it could be the closer for that album too. It could be, and it's often at the very tail end of the set list. It's often in an encore. And so it works quite well in isolation. I have my number 7 is the NS. I think that's pretty similar to your ranking. For many of the same reasons, I will reiterate that. I think it's great that this is something that could potentially, the way that it's been produced, only really work at the beginning either of a side or of an album. And I think one thing that I will add here is that the down-tempo minor to up-tempo major characteristic of this song lends itself to ramping up into an album. And the way that it transfers then into So Beyond Me, in sort of the same key, or at least in the same kind of color of keys, it certainly adds to the qualities of the NS as an opener. So I've got the NS at number 7. I've got Underwhelmed at number 6. And not just because, for the reasons that you said, but also just simply because there's 5 kick-ass songs ahead of it. And my number 5 is Follow the Leader. For the same reasons that you said. I will add, though, that Follow the Leader certainly benefits from having The Answer Was You and Unkind after. You know, I think that Follow the Leader is certainly not to be seen in isolation. Follow the Leader is a product of the way in which they sequence the album.
I like that this one is so high for both of us, considering all of the so-called, like, 90s classics or whatever.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Yeah. We're a decade plus removed from all that here, and it's high for both of us. I like it.
I agree. My number 4 is Pen Pals. Those of you who have been listening to the podcast for a while know that Twice Removed isn't my favorite Sloan album. It's not like my least favorite Sloan album, but there, you know, there's a genre of Sloan fans that place Twice Removed very, very high on their lists. And, you know, I think there's some stuff on there that's potentially, when you listen to the rest of the catalog, you're like, wait a second, this kind of sounds like a band that was on its second album. However, Pen Pals is, for me, kind of like the, you know, Let the Good Times Roll by the Cars. It's the statement track. It's something that's fun. It invites you to listen to the rest of the album. It feels almost as though, and especially the way that it just kicks into I Hate My Generation, it's almost like an unfinished statement. So it's really just inviting you to listen to more. You know, I think that we've talked as well about this. I can't imagine Pen Pals having remained in its dirge-like 93 beats per minute tempo that it was originally written in. You know, we've got that performance from they were doing like a record store performance in London in 93 with Pen Pals, and it just sounded very, very slow and melancholic almost. And when you put that up tempo, it just makes this fantastic intro into an album that, you know, of course, is one of the all-time Canadian rock classics. And Pen Pals, in and of itself, is a great door to I Hate My Generation and to the tracks that are subsequent to that. So Pen Pals is my number 4. Flying High Again is my number 3. I think for the same reasons that we deliberated over, you know, when you were doing your list, I think that Flying High Again, for me, has, of course, the sentimental value of that being my favorite album, of, you know, Never Hear the End of It, Never Hear the End of It, and that tour being fantastic, of like the band is back together, you know, like Andrew is singing a verse. He's, you know, and everybody being on that song was such a powerful thing. And a very, like, you, what other rock band has an opening track, you know, where all four guys take a verse.
If there's a band out there that could do it, it's not anywhere near this good. And I can't even think of a band that could do it. Like, you know,
So,
certainly not a band with all original members who've been kicking ass for years. Like, never. They're without equal. I said this on the show for the thousandth time.
Yeah, but I mean, even if you look at the multi songwriter, multi singer bands out there, you know, we've name dropped a couple in this episode, but like the Eagles, the Eagles aren't collabing on their own tracks, and they're not coming together. It's not like Joe Walsh is coming together with freaking Henley and like, yo, what if you take verse number one on "Stupid Witchy Woman"? I don't know. Like, they're individuals, and they come together despite their ego. You know, and of course we know that Sloan don't like collaborate a whole lot on their tracks. Like when they get into the studio, then they start to, you know, work on arrangements and whatever, but they're off doing their own things to their own people, and they come together and create this thing, which makes Flying High Again all the more special because it's the kickoff to an album that was very much collaborative, you know, in its own special way, certainly in the way in which they were putting the pieces together and figuring things out by themselves in their practice space in 2006 versus the more commercial approaches to assembling the albums before that. So
their ability to produce a song like Flying High Again is one of the reasons why it makes them the greatest.
Yes.
And similar to the NS for Between the Bridges, you could almost make the argument too that Never Hear the End of It was once again after Action Pack and after The Best Of and all that, A-sides win. This one is for us again. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and as much as Flying High Again is a totally acceptable first track that would pull any listener in, it's not Good in Everyone, and it's not She Says What She Means, and it's not whatever. It does its own thing, and it's in its own lane. It's completely unique. And again, it's one for them, and it's fucking classic. Nobody else can do this. Nobody else can do this. Not even close.
You know, I was interestingly thinking before this recording about, is there a world in which Flying High Again is the closer to Never Hear the End of It? And I think that it's actually the only other place in the catalog that this song could exist is potentially at the closing of Never Hear the End of It. You know, I think, I think if I think about the statement that it's making around, like, we're back and we're going at full tilt and we're playing to our strengths, it could be a statement song at the end of the album. I think that another way I could do it, it's, you could make the same argument, like, could that be a great opener? Maybe. I mean, you have to change the way in which it fades out, obviously.
Yeah, you're blowing my mind here. I mean, if you did flip those two, I gotta say that's not that controversial. Like, to open the record with Another Way I Could Do It and have "Hey na 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 dig 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 dig." And Flying High Again being the outro. I mean, I mean, I understand why it's first, because it's just so like a perfect little shot of love at the beginning, and all four guys take a verse, and, you know, it's like introducing the band. It's like, you know,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I don't want to mess with perfection though. Although I think it's fun. Even though deserves a play, if they did 30, they could have done 31. Come on.
It's fun. This sort of fan fiction sequencing is definitely fun and interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that, you know, by process of elimination, I've got The Good in Everyone at number two. We talked about this. It gets me turned. it puts me in the right mood. It's certainly the only opener there's no other opener on One Chord. There's no other track that comes remotely close to being as energetic and as in your face as The Good in Everyone. And I think, you know, you could make the argument as well that that's like the ultimate Sloan encore as well. So is it the greatest single in the band's catalog? We'll eventually get to that episode. my number one is She Says What She Means.
Dude.
It's we're nailing it on a couple of things here. She Says What She Means is so weird in so many ways. And, you know, we've talked about the way in which we entered into our super fandom of the band. For me, it wasn't hearing them on One Chord for the first time and hearing, you know, watching Everything You've Done Wrong on Much Music, it was the moment I bought Navy Blues. And I put that into my stupid Sony CD shit player, it doesn't matter what you're listening to this track on. It's this huge statement. It's rhythmically weird. It's the riff is weird. It's Taxman. It's their Taxman. Things about this song come out and slap you in the face. And it's almost, I don't want to say it's too good for the album, because Navy Blues is potentially my second favorite. And it's at times, you know, before Never Hear the End of It came out, definitely my number one album. But there's so much going on in this song that it builds and builds and builds and builds and builds even more, you know. And I think it's almost a shame that for a long time live, they just didn't touch it, because it's almost as though Chris, like, he made it a song that was even too good for him to do live. You know, he's admitted he can't hit the high notes with, you know, comfort, although I think that's BS, because when they did the Navy Blues tour, he was nailing it. You know, it's hard to nail rhythmically. It's hard to stay on point when singing for that long at that level. And it kind of, you're not able to replicate, you know, the statement that it makes on record very well live when it's in the middle of a set. So to me, this is the ultimate opener. It's their Taxman. It's their, you know, whatever the other great openers of all time are. If I'm going to dig into my Sloan spreadsheet where I rank all the songs based on, you know, whatever I feel is popular today, it's always going to be in my top five. This is just one of the best rock songs ever written, period, point blank, done.
Yeah. Everybody, like the guys who I ran with in high school, like they got me into Sloan. Like I've said it before in the first couple episodes, my buddy Chris Boyne took me to the show in September 96. Yeah. Life was changed. And then Navy Blues came out. And everybody I knew, whether they were kind of hard, like more like Aussie guys or guys who were maybe a little more hip hop or whatever, everybody agreed on Sloan. And she says what she means, like, you know, I'd walk down the hall in high school and somebody would be playing that like on a ghetto blaster or something. You know what I mean? Like it was like, or they would play it during morning announcements or something. Like it was a big, big song that kind of everybody agreed upon, that whole record. But I mean, to put that record on, that's the first statement.
Yeah. And, this song is so good and so energetic that they have to pump the brakes at the end of the song. If you think about how the song finishes with that drum riff, it's like they're pumping the brakes on the song. It's like, okay, we're done. We have to slow down because come on is coming. And you know, like that's another awesome song, but it's like, okay, well, you know, slow down.
Couple things that I think are notable when seeing a band live.
Yeah.
It's always impressive when you see a band perform a song that you know is not, I don't want to say difficult for them to perform, but is a physical feat. And we mentioned that earlier with Follow the Leader. It's a physical feat to perform that. You know what I mean? Like it's like going to the circus and seeing somebody juggle or swallow swords or something. Like it's like what they're doing could go sideways at any time, you know? Yeah. So it's something else to see it. The fact that you're seeing it, well, I'm seeing it. She says she means is the same in a way, not only vocally, but it's crazy musically.
Yeah.
So there's that layer. And then there's my other favorite thing of live music, which is a controlled outro, you know, which is not just, you know, bang, wash, 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 but bank, you know, but it's whenever you want me, it just fucking stops on a dime, you know, like there's something impressive. And they've got songs in the rest of the catalog where they do that too, but it's an impressive move for the layperson to see them go from fucking wilding out to just pop, you know, just like slam the song to a halt. And then you have silence, you know, and there's no whenever you want me, bang, like there's none of that. It's just snap it to a close and then they move on to the next thing, you know. So it's got everything. It's weird. It's got a crazy, weird sideways riff. It's also one of the catchiest songs you've ever heard. It's an incredible feat to sing it. It just goes from one drive into hyperdrive and then it snaps to a close at the end of nowhere. It's just, you know. it's unreal. What can I say? Jesus.
Yeah. All right. Well, those are our rankings. So fairly close. And we can dive into the community rankings. You know, we polled our Instagram friends to just tell us their top. I think it was the top three or something of their openers. Not I averaged that out. So there were many answers, and I thank you all for contributing your thoughts to this. It's certainly helping us come up with content. And at number 13 on the Sloancast community openers ranking was We've Come This Far.
I got to just interject again. Sorry. Listening, just talking about this song in this episode, I've got it queued up now on my Apple Music. As soon as we're done recording, I'm going to listen to it. I was thinking about the solo in there. And by the time he gets to You Got a Lot on Your Mind, like, oh, it's over. Anyway, so listener, after this episode, go listen to Commonwealth. That's my recommendation. Anyway, please continue.
Number 12 is Spin Our Wheels. So very similar so far. Number 11 is Believe in Me. Number 10 is Gimme That, a little bit lower than ours, but I think considering our enthusiasm, our above average enthusiasm for Action Pack, that makes sense. Number 9 is If It Feels Good, Do It. All the way down here. Number 8, Magical Thinking. Number 7, The NS. Number 6, Follow the Leader. Number 5, Underwhelmed. Number 4, Pen Pals. Number 3, Flying High Again. Number 2, She Says What She Means. And then number 1, The Good in Everyone. I will add, doesn't shock me. I think
Shocking. Yeah.
You know, judging on sort of the tastes that we see in the community out there, I'm more of a Navy Blues than I am a one chord guy. There's, I think, certainly a lot of big one chord fans out there. So it makes sense. And like you said, Rob, this could go very different if we were to do this in a month's time. Super interesting and a great exercise as well. And just like trying to be objective about your approach to this band's music. So thank you everybody out there in podcast land for contributing your thoughts.
Absolutely. I love too that latter day hits like, you know, Follow the Leader and Flying High Again are on that top tier. They're in the top half of that list for everybody. That's great. Yeah. But anyway, Ken, thank you for this suggestion. I had a lot of fun doing this show, although it was incredibly painful. but as everybody knows, we want to thank you for listening because this podcast is dedicated to you because this show is for people who painfully rank their favorite Sloan songs. And with that, for Ken, myself, we'll check you next time on the next episode of Sloancast. See you later.
Bye-bye. All right.